second.
Is there a list, mailing list?
There is. There's a mailing list. Max has it. Okay. We have not been together to learn the Gvuras Hashem in several weeks due to the Yom Tov. When we last learned, we were in the middle of Perek Yotes. And middle of Perek Yotes, or the point where we are, we could be in the beginning of something. As we have mentioned, and as we have seen, the Maharal is in the middle of the style which he uses here in the Gvuras Hashem, which is discussing Yetzias Mitzrayim, is to take sections of the narrative in the Torah about Yetzias Mitzrayim and to analyze it progressively, step by step. And so, here he's in the middle of the narrative about Moshe Rabbeinu and the emergence of Moshe Rabbeinu as the leader of the Jewish people. And where we are up to in the story is where Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the house of Yisrael, to Midian, and encounters the daughters of Yisro at the Be'er, at the well, and eventually, of course, marries Tzipora, the daughter of Yisro. And what Maral has been dealing with in this latter section here in Perek Yotes, in this middle section in Perek Yotes, is how is it that Moshe Rabbeinu was made to, was not made, but was set up to marry the daughter of the Kohen Midian, of this master Oved Avodah Zarah, this master idol worshiper who was Yisrael. And we're going to review briefly what the Maharal has said thus far, what we've learned about thus far, and in Yirat Hashem continue with hopefully with the balance of the Perek, which deals further with Tzipora and with Yisrael and with this match. The Maharal said, first of all, he said, is that Chazal understood, of course, and this is the Medrash which he quotes, that he was Kayan Midian, he was the erstwhile Kayan Midian, the former Kayan Midian. And when the daughters of Yisrael were chased away from the Be'er, were chased away from the well, it wasn't because it was the strong shepherds taking advantage of the vulnerable girls, but rather it was because of a nidui. It was based on religious grounds. Yisro had renounced Avodah Zarah. He had stopped serving Avodah Zarah. And because of that, because of his renouncement of idol worship, they had sanctioned him. They had put him in cherem. And therefore, that's why they were oppressing the daughters of Yisrael. And the Gemara brings it actually with a comparison to yesterday's Parsha, by Adam Arishon, when he was sent away from Gan Eden, so to speak, in disgrace, it was says, Vayigoresh es ha'adam. So you see there, usage of the term Vayigoresh as chasing away due to sanctions. So over here also, says the Medrash, when it says Vayigoreshum, they were also being chased away because of sanctions. Of course, it was the inverse, that in that case it was the Rabbeinu Shel Olam chasing away, and over here it was Yisrael. It was the Rabbeinu Shel Olam chasing away because of his religious failure, and here it was the people of Midian chasing away because of his religious success, so to speak, because of his choosing of the true faith. But it's the same idea, the same motivation, the same driver, and therefore it's that's what it is. So that's phase one of the answer, says the Maharal. Phase one of the answer is that he wasn't marrying an idol worshiper. He was marrying someone who in fact had renounced idol worship. Gevaldik, kol hakavod. But says the Maharal, I'm still not satisfied. And the reason why I'm not satisfied is, okay, and phase one, we're going to get to sort of like phase two and phase three a little bit later, Yirat Hashem, but phase one of why he's not satisfied is that why shouldn't Moshe Rabbeinu marry someone from the Mishpacha Miuchesas B'Yisrael, from the aristocracy of the Jewish people? Right? It's true. Okay, so he's not marrying actually an idol worshiper or the daughter of an active idol worshiper in this case. But this is Moshe Rabbeinu. He's going to be the king of the Jewish people. You would imagine he would marry the daughter of the Achves, of the Duke of Simeon. I don't know, you know, whatever it would be. He would marry someone from the aristocracy of the Jewish people. Chazal even contrast, and they say that Aaron HaKohen was the father of an aristocracy. Aaron HaKohen was the father of all the Kayanim. Who did he marry? He married Elisheva Bas Aminadav. Elisheva Bas Aminadav was the sister of Nachshon Ben Aminadav. They were descendants of the tribe of Yehuda. Nachshon Ben Aminadav was almost the first personality of the offspring of Yehuda who is identified with royalty and leadership of the Jewish people. He was the leading prince as the Jewish people traveled out of Mitzrayim and through the desert. Royalty married royalty and produced a dynasty. However, Moshe Rabbeinu did not have a dynasty. Not at all. Oh, he had a dynasty of students, but he had no dynasty from his marriage. His children are not noteworthy for continuing in Moshe Rabbeinu's ways. In certain sense, Chazal even make them infamous for being involved with Avodah Zarah. Yonasan ben Gershom ben Moshe. Ben Moshe ben Menashe. Whatever the context is. For Pesel Micha, for a shameful episode of idol worship which occurred within the B'nai Yisrael. So, Chazal point out this contrast. So there was certainly something that was lacking here for this particular situation. So why did it have to be this way? And the Maharal explained that Moshe Rabbeinu was, I'm going to say this in the simplest terms, Moshe Rabbeinu was too big to marry any particular Jewish woman. And the idea was, because Moshe Rabbeinu stood keneged kol Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu stood, we find that Moshe Rabbeinu stands as the equal of Klal Yisrael. Chazal make the drasha in different places. Maral brings a medrash, right? We find Moshe v'Yisrael, Shoko Moshe Yisrael, Yisrael ko Moshe. Maral brings a medrash which says that there was a woman in Mitzrayim who gave birth to 600,000. Whoa. Right? Says, well, that's a lot of diapers. Says, well, no. Says the medrash, no. What that means is that there was a woman who gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu who was equal to the Shishim Ribo. And that was Yocheved, the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Rabbi said, but the Jewish people weren't available to him to marry out, to marry. Because they're all in Egypt, right? He was out there.
Yes, they're all in Egypt. So, but maybe he could just have refuge in Midian and not get married. You know, or whatever. He would have a wife from the B'nai Yisrael that he met earlier and came with him, or that he would meet later and he would meet later, or they would also, for some reason or another, wander or escape from Mitzrayim. How is it that this match made in heaven was not what you would have had necessarily have anticipated for Moshe Rabbeinu specifically? So there is this idea, and says the Maharal, what's an Ezer supposed to be? An Ezer is supposed to be an Ezer Kenegdai. A wife is supposed to be somehow a corresponding, an equal, in a certain sense. And Moshe Rabbeinu is there as the equal of all of the Shishim Ribo of Klal Yisrael, then how would it work for him to marry one specific woman within Klal Yisrael? So therefore, says the Maharal, the only alternative was for him to marry someone who was not part of that community, that was Shokol Kemoshe. And in that sense, that way he would be able to have some kind of a thing. And the way he expresses in a certain sense is, Moshe is Nivdal mi Yisrael, Moshe is separate from the Jewish people, he's not one of the 600,000, and so too he married someone who joined the Jewish people who wasn't also part of the 600,000. It's something which is, you know, it's a little bit hard to wrap your head around it completely, conceptually, but this is the basic idea, huh?
To me, that sounds like outsiders, or it doesn't necessarily sound the same thing as the.
It doesn't
Canadian.
Sound the same thing. Doesn't sound the same thing, and but as you see, as the Maharal starts and continues, he doesn't. He doesn't make it into two separate answers. He rolls it together into one, this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu could not be included in the Shishim Ribay. He was equal to the Shishim Ribay, and therefore, so he couldn't marry any one of them, and at the same time as well, he was outside, so therefore he would marry somebody from the outside. It's hard, you know, because I guess the obvious question would be, and this is part of the conceptual challenge, at least for me in this Maral, is that, so she is Kenegdo? She is his equal? Right? You know, Moshe Rabbeinu is so outstanding, corresponding to all Shishim Ribo, so he can't marry any one of them, so she is his equal? No, it's hard. But again, when Moshe Rabbeinu's role is for all of them, to single out one becomes difficult. If Moshe Rabbeinu's role is for all of them, and so we get somebody else whose role is not in that way for all of them, then that doesn't disturb the equation. And the Maral we talked about last time spoke about this idea that in the story of Korach, all of the men of the Jewish people were mekanei. They warned their wives about Moshe Rabbeinu, as if Moshe Rabbeinu was a threat. Shechashduhu me'eshes ish. They suspected him of Eishes Ish, and it's a very strange statement. Right? So some understand, we explained last time, that because Moshe Rabbeinu separated from his wife for Kabbalah Satayra, because Moshe Rabbeinu separated from his wife, they said, how does a human being do that? That's not the way normally human beings operate. So he must have some release for his male needs, and therefore you better watch out from him, right? That's the way. That's one way to understand it. But that, of course, is being very, very pedestrian about Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Maral explained it in a broader way, and we made a comparison, which I hope should not be misunderstood. But this is exactly the fallacy of the comparison, which was made in the Jewish people's eyes, and that is like this. So let's speak about it first conceptually, then we'll bring the comparison. I'm more comfortable doing it that way. Conceptually, the way the Maral explained it was like this: that Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who is Nisein Tzura. He gives the form, the direction to Klal Yisrael. That's the way we see Moshe Rabbeinu. We see it by a melech, by a king generally. He guides and orients the community towards something. Torah is supposed to do that for the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu, as the king, granting Torah to the Jewish people on both fronts, Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Tzura, the direction for the Jewish people. A woman's relationship with her husband is drawn, as the Maral even discussed a little bit earlier in this parak by explaining why it happens by a be'er, marriage has happened by a well, is supposed to be a relationship of Chaymer v'Tzura. That's the way it's seen. That the woman provides the material structure, the material of the household, and the man is supposed to determine the tzura, the direction. The family name comes from the husband. Not that the woman plays no role in this, of course. Tzura can only work with the chomer, and the chomer has influence on the tzura as well. And we know significantly that is the case. However, that's in a certain sense the way it works. So what happens here is you have two givers, granters of tzura. You have the husband granting tzura, sort of trying to mold and form the direction of the family, including his wife. And then you have Moshe Rabbeinu, in macro, doing that for the Bnei Yisrael, doing that for the Jewish people. So, excuse again the comparison, but this is a comparison of perception, the way the Bnei Yisrael perceived Moshe Rabbeinu. What do you have always in these horror stories of these cults, where there's a charismatic leader? So what does he do? Right, so he defines everybody according to his dictates, according to his vision, is what everybody in that community does. And so often, those Rishoyim, what do? They also intrude physically upon the marital relationships of the people in their cult. Why? Because they're giving the tzura. It's not their husband, in a certain sense, is neutered from giving the tzura, because you have this overwhelming personality above them, above the husband, who's giving the tzura to them all. And so he intrudes upon the relationship. Says the Maral, that's the idea of chashduhu me'eshes ish. Whether it's literal or not literal, whether they actually believed that Moshe Rabbeinu would step in physically in their relationship or not. But they felt this tension between them, who were trying to put the imprint on their family, and Moshe Rabbeinu, who was putting the broader imprint on them, on their family, as part of the Bnei Yisrael, as part of the Jewish people. And that was the source of the tension, of the competition. It says the Maral, oy, they made a mistake. A terrible mistake. So, excuse me, so first of all, one second. So this is the, Maral brings this up because in the context of what we said, that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't marry any specific woman of the Jewish people, it's because of this broad vision. Moshe Rabbeinu was having this role with everybody. But he says he made a terrible mistake. And the terrible mistake was that Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship of giving tzura to the Jewish people was a transcendent tzura. It wasn't the tzura hadavak b'chaymer. There's such a thing as a tzura chamris. There's such a thing as a structure to physical matter. And then there's such a thing as a transcendent tzura. A tzura that is above, that is nivdeles, that is above chaymer. Right? When you take a ball of clay and you shape it and mold it, right? So there you're taking the physical matter and you're giving it tzura. Right? So now it's a cup. But tell me something, when you decide to use the cup for Kiddush, that's also a tzura that you're giving to the cup. You're not physically changing it. You're not, you know, it's something above that. It's not using the material in order to make the tzura. I don't know if that's a perfect example, but it's an okay example. Says the Maral, the male-female was, that dynamic was the tzura anidbekes b'chaymer. That's the tzura which is attached to the chaymer. Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with the Jewish people was completely transcendent. And he says, and that's why, look what Moshe Rabbeinu responds to the mutiny of Kairach. What did he say? He said, Loi chamor echod meyem nososi. I didn't take the donkey, the chaymer, the physicality of one of them. If Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with Klal Yisrael was one which was built on any level of chaymer, why wouldn't he? Tell me something. You would begrudge Moshe Rabbeinu a company donkey? And he wouldn't be entitled to have such a thing? But the idea, he was king. He was the leader of the Jewish people. If he had to travel, which he did, back and forth to Midian, and from Midian to Mitzrayim, it was on his own dime. He didn't use the company, the corporate account at Hertz Rent a Donkey. Right? It's not what he did. Moshe Rabbeinu did his own. Why? Because his relationship with Klal Yisrael was muvdal, was not attached to chaymer, to physicality. But Klal Yisrael couldn't perceive that. And of course, when you study the story of Kairach, you know that that's the big issue. The mutiny of Kairach is, what's the difference between Moshe and us? Just like, again, Lahavdil, Miriam said, what's the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and us? We're also Nevi'im. And what is the difference, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu said when he responded to Miriam, is that you see prophecy in your physical way. Moshe Rabbeinu, he communicates with me like communicating with a peer. His relationship, Moshe Rabbeinu, is completely, he's kemalach elokim in the language of the Rambam. He completely transcends the physical. He's not intruding on your relationship with your wife. That's a relationship of tzura v'chaymer. Moshe Rabbeinu is completely transcendent. Great. So that's the way the Maral explains that deviation. And he says, so again, going back to this, but again, it does still remove Moshe Rabbeinu from being able to have had a relationship with any single member of the Jewish people, since Moshe Rabbeinu is the Isha Klal. He points out an interesting thing.
From for that reason?
That's why, well, for what we just spoke about, his need to become completely separated from any kind of physicality, he separated from Tzipora, yes. But he married Tzipora originally because as Moshe Rabbeinu, as the man of the Klal, he could not relate to a prat within the Klal that he was there to service. Because Tzipora was not a part of the Klal that he was there to service. She came from the outside and he married her from the outside and on the outside. That's why. One could speculate, I don't remember if we said this last time, one could speculate that It is when Moshe Rabbeinu brought Tzipora back into the Jewish, not back, but into the Jewish people for the first time, that he had to separate from her. Because when she was a convert in Midian, she was a convert to belief in Hashem. She wasn't yet attached to the Jewish people. Okay, let me, once I mentioned it, let me just try to explain what I'm about to say a little bit. What's the nature of Geirus, of conversion? Conversion can be a theological experience, or it can be a national identity experience. Conversion as a theological experience is rejecting Avodah Zarah and believing in the one God. Conversion as a national experience is joining the Jewish people. We only have conversion in contemporary halacha. We only have conversion that works with joining the national experience of the Jewish people. That's the only way that it works. And in a certain sense, it's because Hashem made his relationship, the God-man relationship, with Avram Avinu, and he doesn't expand it to include relationships with anybody else. If you want to have the relationship with God, you have to associate with Avram Avinu. So you need a Beis Din of Shloisha Yisrael to bring you in to that relationship. When Rus converted, for example, what did she say? She said, Amech Ami Velekayach Elokai. Your people are my people, your God is my God, in that order. She joined the Jewish people, and with that, she joined the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With Tzipora, it didn't happen in that order. With Yisrael, it didn't happen in that order. And they renounced Avodah Zarah. Tzipora married Moshe Rabbeinu in Midian. There was no Beis Din Yisrael. Right? Even Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, would not be functioning as a Beis Din Yisrael at that point in time. at that point in time. They joined God. She joined God, she was an outsider to the cloud that Moshe Rabbeinu serviced. But when Moshe Rabbeinu brings her to Mitzrayim, because he says, I'm going to rejoin my people. And as he said, when they were surprised, when Aaron was surprised, why are you bringing more people here? Right? We have enough who are suffering. Why are you bringing other people into slavery? So he said, what do you mean? The Jewish people are having this experience and my family will not be with them? He was bringing them to join, was going from Elekayach Elekai, Elekecha Elekai, to Amecha Ami. And when that happened, he had to separate from her. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was Klal Yisrael. He couldn't have a protheistic relationship. One could say. The Maral doesn't say it here. I don't know if he says it someplace else. But one could say that that's part of this Apsi.
Wasn't it that Har Sinai
that the formal separation takes place. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Li'atah Hayamedi Madi, but it is clear that there were issues of separation that took place even before. For example, what's the first psukim in Parshas Yisrael? So he brought Tzipora, Yisrael brought Tzipora achar shiluche, after she had been sent away. Now, that's written before Matan Torah. There's a famous machlokas in Chazal, whether it occurred before Matan Torah, whether it occurred after Matan Torah. But it's, again, a significant opinion that it was even before Matan Torah that Tzipora had to be sent away because of the circumstances, whatever, of bringing her back to Mitzrayim. But we don't have a description of their union. Again, just a speculation, not as essential to our discussion.
When they came, they just had young children, right, infants, because he needed a breast, or he could have been like as they're coming, and hadn't given a first mila to Eliezer, was it? And then Yocheved did it, whatever.
Yeah.
But Moshe is 80 at this point, right?
Right.
Because I was wondering, this whole separation, you know, is 80 years old, you know, how significant is that? But I guess it is.
It is very significant. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't an old 80-year-old, remember. Moshe Rabbeinu was like Chlas Ha'inev Leinas Lecha. He was as young. He was younger than me and you. Didn't have gray hair. Right? So it's not. It's not the.
What?
He's got the long beard.
In the movies, he has a long beard. White.
It's absolutely incorrect. It's absolutely incorrect. No, that's one thing which is absolutely incorrect. He could have had a long beard, but a black beard.
White.
Huh?
But it wasn't white.
A black beard. And no glasses.
Is this related all to Moshe Rabbeinu's speech impediment? I mean, vis-a-vis the Jewish people, he couldn't speak to them. Meaning that he wasn't able to. He was so nifdal from Klal Yisrael that it was difficult to interact.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that that's it. Mir Tashem, we're going to see a little bit more later in the Maral about it. But we'll see. Okay. In the Maral, we're going to knock on the Maral and spend time. The Maral brings also Chazal, where there was a similar sort of insinuation about Yirmiyo HaNavi, and about people also suspected him of all kinds of immorality and marriage relationship, and Maral explains that this is again because there are comparisons which Chazal draw between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yirmiyahu in their role as prophets for the entire Jewish people, so therefore to extent the same concerns existed. Okay, but then Maral, and this is in the middle of a paragraph, not sure why the printer did it this way, but it's in the, towards the end, middle of the first column on Pei Tes in the classic edition. So Maral brings phase two of the question. Okay, remember, what was phase one of the question? Excuse me, let's say phase three of the question, if we want to be more accurate. Phase one of the question is, why is he marrying the daughter of a priest? Right. So phase one of the answer was that he wasn't a priest, he was a former priest. He had renounced Avodah Zarah. Oh, okay, we feel much better. But then phase two of the question is, why isn't he marrying aristocracy from within the Jewish people? So Maral has explained why he can't marry from within the Jewish people. That's phase two. Phase three of the question, says the Maral, is, but why is he marrying the child of someone who once served Avodah Zarah? It's true that he renounced Avodah Zarah. Okay, so he's okay now. But, you know, and he says this was going to be an insult at some point that would be hurled at Pinchas, who was a descendant of Yisrael, and he said, oh, your grandfather was Mefatem Agolim L'Avodah Zarah. He used to fatten up calves to offer to idols. Right? As a point of some kind of embarrassment to him. So why should Moshe Rabbeinu, why could Moshe Rabbeinu just marry the, you know, the daughter of some guy who just used to show up to church and not really pay much attention to what was going on? Why did he have to marry the daughter of the grand pupa? Says the Maral, what are you talking about? That's the best. Oh, other people will turn it into an insult. Of course they'll turn it into an insult. But he says that Avodah Zarah mu'usa be'enei avdeha. The Medrash says, Avodah Zarah is repugnant to those who worshipped it. This is the way the Maral understands it. In other words, when you did it, and you know how empty it is, you're so much more disgusted by it than the person who never really tried. Says Maral, that's part of the pshat of B'mokhaim shabali tshuva aimdim afilu tzadikim gemurim eina michaylam lamayt. Why is there an opinion in the Gemara, the opinion of Resh Lakish, that the Balei Tshuva are higher than the Tzadikim Gemurim, than the always righteous? Why? This person once upon a time fattened calves for Avodah Zarah or ate something which was forbidden. This person never had such a thing cross his lips. Says the Maral. Because if you've been there and you've done that and you've turned away from it, your distance from it, your abhorrence for it, is much more intense, and therefore you're that much more pure of it than if you just never did it. So this was the purest place. This was the purest place.
Similarly with this?
Yeah. Okay. Now, the Maral is going to continue on. We're going to still have one more question. Phase four of the question. But we're not there yet. Okay? Before we get there, we're going to take a little break following the Seder HaMaral for two other things, for two little things, so to speak. The Kohen Midon had seven daughters, the Pasuk says. And Tzipora was the seventh. So what's the idea? So says the Maral, because the seventh is Shabbos, the seventh is Shemitah, the seventh is always the holiest. And that's why we have the seven numbers. Why was she called, what kind of interesting name is her? Tzipora. I have a Tzipora, right? Fegela, birdie, ladybird, right? The first lady of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what's the idea? Why did she have such a funny name, Tzipora? So here again, he brings what Chazal say, which the Medrash says that her name was Tzipora Shetira Kol Beis Aviyah Kedama Tzipor. She purified her father's house like the blood of a tzipor. In other words, she did come from a complex background, but she purified that background, and she purified it Kedam Tzipor, like the blood of a tzipor, like the blood of a bird. And what does that mean? So the idea is as follows, that by Mitzayra we have a purification process which includes taking two birds, shechting one of them, the min is in the main tree, the ninth. So the idea is that the Gemara says that the birds are used in order to accomplish the purification of the Mitzvah. You shecht one bird, you dip it in the blood, you dip a live bird in the blood of the other one. That's the purification of the Mitzvah. And says the Maral, well, why is this Mitzayra? Mitzayra is like a mace, a leper is like one who is dead, Avodah Zarah is if Chemesim is like a mess. And so, what she did by being the one to marry Moshe Rabbeinu was not just that she got lucky, but she, in fact, she made Yisrael and his whole family a big, right? Yisrael becomes Yiter Parsha Achas Batayra. He added a whole rule, a whole episode, a whole chapter into the Torah, rule, the whole judicial system. How did he make it? He made it through Tzipora. Tzipora was his bridge to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Klal Yisrael, to the Jewish people. And it was a bridge of purification, and the Tzipora brings such purification. And the Maral explains, what does this mean? What does this mean? Why is it like the blood of a tzipor? Well, the blood of a tzipor is because blood is life, is vitality, and that's why it's metayer from death. But it's a tzipor specifically because a bird. Right? When you speak about death, what do you speak about death? You know what the term grave comes from? Or what term it's related to? It's gravity. What's gravity? Being pulled down to the earth. Right? The grave is the ultimate pull down to the earth. Ki ofar ata del ofar tashuv. The magnetic pull of death. I think I told some of you once that I have a friend, a colleague, who's a very, very eloquent and poetic rabbi. Like, very eloquent and very poetic. So we were once walking together someplace in a different state, and we saw a waterfall. So I said, tell me, why is it that everybody loves to look at a waterfall? It's unbelievable. You know, if you ever went to a national park, people will go trudge miles and miles through all kinds of beautiful sights and everything else. Just they want to see the waterfall. Waterfalls are like a magnet. So why does everybody want to see a waterfall? So he said to me like that. He made it up on his body, he's so poetic. He said, because everybody is worried and concerned about this pull to the ground. And when you see something that gets pulled to the ground gracefully, it gives you great comfort, gives you great relief. That's why people love to see a waterfall. So I don't know if it's true. It's poetic. It's beautiful. But the thing is that the reality is that the idea that we, why are malachim always visualized as ma'ayfef? I mean, this is not, you know, in some comic strip. This is in Psukim as flying. Why do malachim fly? Why? Because they're not rooted in the ground. They're not stuck to the ground. They're not, you know, spending 120 years or however many trying to avoid Yardivar, right, descending into the depths, into the gravitational pull of the grave. A tzipor, a bird that flies, represents vitality. A tzipor represents that ability to rise up, that lightness. It's a chaymer, its physicality is less dense. And Maral goes on and he says that, you know, there's a famous thing in Chazal, yesterday's Parsha, the birds, what were they created from? The birds were created on the fifth day. On the fifth day it says, Yishritzu amayim, let the water swarm, sheretz nefesh chaya, living beings. And birds will fly over the earth. Where were they created from? It sounds like they were created from the water. But in chapter 2, in Perek Beis of Bereshis, it says, and God formed from the earth all of the animals and all of the birds. So one second, was it created from the water or was it created from the earth? It says, well, it was created from the rakak. What's rakak? Rakak is from the mud, from where the water of the ocean meets the sand of the earth, of the beach, that muddy part. That's where they were created from where water and earth meet. And that means that they're not as earthy, they're not as physical, they're not as fishy, you know, they're not as water as the fish, but they're somewhere in between. They're somewhere in between. And so that their chaymer, their physicality is less physical, less pulled to the grave. And says the Maral, just as Yisrael was from Midian on the outside and Moshe was from Yisrael on the inside, Tzipora from the Rakak, Tzipora was the bridge. She was from Midian, joined Moshe Rabbeinu, and that actually was the bridge to bring her whole family in. I remember the Maral that we learned about why Yosef went down to Mitzrayim through Yishmael. Because Yishmael was the bridge between Mitzrayim, his mother Hagar, and Yisrael, his father Avram. So he served as the bridge to bring Yosef from Yisrael down to Mitzrayim. Right? A similar thought, Tzipora serves as the bridge between the earth and the heavens, between the physicality and the spirituality, the water and the earth. And so that was her role. Okay. But let us just now conclude with the last phase 4 of the Maral's question. He says Yisrael himself must have had some shaychus to Moshe. Why? So he says, let me go to phase 4 of my question. It says about Yisrael that Yisrael lahiniach avodah zarah shelo avda. Yisrael did not leave behind a single avodah zarah that he didn't worship. He tried everything. Boy, so he was the ultimate Eved Avodah Zarah. What's going on? Right now, the Maral doesn't phrase this really as phase 4 of the question, because you might say, oh, you can answer it the same way you said with 3. Why did we have a former Eved Avodah Zarah? Because he couldn't stand Avodah Zarah more than anybody. But with Yisrael, So he's tried every Avodah Zarah, so he hated every Avodah Zarah. Great, fantastic. But the Maharal says it's much bigger than that. And that is, because what is really the one of the traps of Avodah Zarah? One of the traps of Avodah Zarah is that you focus on a kayach that's there in the world. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is called Elohim, whereas other Avodah Zarahs are called Eloha. Individually, they're called Eloha. Right? Elohim is the term we use for many different Avodah Zarahs. Elohim is the term we use for the single service of Hashem. Right, it's a basic question. Maral asks the question himself somewhere else. Why Elohim is Lashon Rabbim, is in the plural. We say Hashem Echad, Hashem is the one and only, and yet we refer to him by name Elohim, which is in the plural. Like, isn't that dangerous? Right? So Maral has an answer. But the simple meaning of Elohim in the plural is, as Rashi says, is Bal HaKoyches Kulam. He's the one source for every force, for everything that exists in the world. Yisrael could not serve one Avodah Zarah because he understood that a single force is a koyach prati, is a particular force, and he knew that there was something that animated the entire universe. So therefore Yisrael had to touch it all. He had to move to have connection with every Avodah Zarah that was there in the world, because Yisrael knew that there was a bigger picture. There was a plethora of these kaychas that were there in the world. Yisrael lo nocha datoi b'kayach echad prati, aval oyo oyver es kulam ayachayshev ki zeh roi loi. He couldn't serve one kayach. He served them all. He figured that was suited for him. V'zeh mimalas Yisrael. Shleyo muchan liyayz davak b'kayach prati. He wasn't ready to be attached to a specific kayach. Till he converted and came to serve Hashem, who is it all. So in other words, he couldn't think small. Until he found Hashem, his way of dealing with it was, there's the sun, there's the moon, there's the stars. I can't believe that any one of them, I see them all in tension. There's no one of them that controls the whole thing. So instead of hitching his fate to a single star, he looked at everything, looked at every force in the world, and recognized it. Ultimately, Yisrael used that broader vision to find the CEO, to find the source that's behind it all.
He's like Avram.
In that sense. But the way we have this path of Kol HaKoyches Kulam, Kol Avedus Roshu'elam Lohiniach, because he knew there was a big picture. And the odyssey of Yisrael serving all the Avedus Zoras was the odyssey of finding that big picture.
You didn't know there was Hashem?
He did eventually.
I mean, no, but you had Avraham Avinu, you know, how many, a few hundred years before, it wasn't a new thing. I mean, they totally forgot about this?
Yeah.
I was in India for several months. This is when I wasn't from. And they, they're devoted.